KALW. From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in Daly City, otherwise known as Little Manila.
Lower Hay.
Outer Richmond.
Fremont.
South of Market.
The Marina.
The E.
Trow Hill.
Coming up, 77 people were murdered last year in Oakland. We'll talk with two journalists who reported on every one.
I think so often, they just become numbers. And what we wanted to do was put some names to faces.
We'll hear the stories of the victims, their families, and their communities.
I did cry in front of my students just when I was explaining to them that I love them and we're a family and we're gonna get through this together.
We're talking with our friends from Snap Judgment about their new radio documentary, Counted, an Oakland story, today on a special edition of Cross Currents. In 2017, there were 77 homicides in Oakland. Our friends at the podcast Snap Judgment reported on each one. All last year, they explored the stories of the people who were lost to violence, their families, and their communities. The result of this year-long reporting is a new documentary called Counted, an Oakland Story. Producers Anna Sussman and Adiza Egan join me in studio to talk about it.
The reason like we wanted to do this project is we wanted to do some stories at Snap that were bigger. Normally we do first person stories and, you know, they're event based and they just start with one event and then they end. And mm-hmm. we wanted to follow people and talk about, you know, who they are, what they wanted, and do something local. And one thing that's interesting about Oakland right now is that, you know, at one point the numbers were really high. And the numbers have gone down. They've kind of floated around 80 in the last few years. And so the news used to report about it all the time, another homicide in Oakland. A lot of people who are in the Bay Area saw the news and, like, you know, they would think of Oakland as this place where it was dangerous and whatnot.
Right.
But, of course, we know there's so much more to Oakland, and also that since the number has gone down, a lot of the press around it has also gone down, but there's still people who are dying. And a lot of them are young Black men and their families who they leave behind. So we wanted to kind of like capture what the ripple effect of homicide looks like for a family in Oakland right now.
And that the story is not over.
Yeah.
Because the numbers went down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, tell that to somebody who lost their child, right? Tell them. And the ripple effect was really important to us because a lot of this was our attempt to do something that said Black Lives Matter. And with all of these young Black men dying, we wanted to show the impact that their deaths had on everybody who loved them and everybody who taught them and everybody who knew them and everybody who met them, that their life wasn't nothing.
Okay, so you had this idea. Going out, actually, and finding the people to talk to, where did you even start?
Well, Facebook was very helpful. You know, we found Facebook, and there's a couple pages that we followed. And, you know, through the pages, we learned about events. And one of the first people we met was Daryl Allums. And he is this guy who, he's from Oakland. He grew up, he used to be in the streets. And then, you know, one day he decided no more of this. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to let people know, you know, stop killing our kids, just do whatever he could to get the violence down, get the number down.
A couple years ago, he just started standing out on the corner of 90th and MacArthur in Oakland with holding up a homemade poster board with pictures of kids who had been killed. And he just started screaming, stop killing our kids.
Here we go again. Bang, bang, boogie, bang, bang, boogie. Not this one.
So I decided that I was going to try to decrease the homicides in Oakland. Got started on 9 on MacArthur with one poster board. It had six pictures on there. And then another poster board I had marked on there, stop killing my kids. I went to each corner on a stoplight yelling, stop killing my kids.
Stop killing my kids. I'm the man with the purple hair on the corner 9 on MacArthur. Stop killing my kids.
And a lot of people thought he was crazy, but a lot of people really appreciated what he was doing.
So let's hear about some more stories. If you can tell me about Dave DePoris.
Yeah, so Dave, he was a singer-songwriter, and he lived in Oakland. He was at a coffee shop in North Oakland, and he was on his laptop outside, and someone came up and snatched his laptop, and he went chasing after them.
Just all his music was on there.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't want to part with it.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, like in 12 Coffee, and a unit to cover it, Rich.
On August 9th, Dave DePorres, a 40-year-old folk singer, was sitting outside the Hawk and Pony coffee shop in North Oakland.
The vehicle versus pedestrian. With the victim bleeding from the head.
I was in the jungles of Sri Lanka, and I went there to look for leopards. And I got up at 6 in the morning, and I turned my phone on, and I saw that about every 2 or 3 minutes, there was a phone call coming in, either from my ex-wife or from my stepdaughter. And I knew there was something terribly wrong that had happened.
This is Dave DePorres' father, Gene.
And I called and said, "What's going on?" It was my ex-wife, and there was a long pause, and she said, "Gene, our son is dead." And that's how I learned about David. My son died at 40.
From that, what we learned from that story was that, you know, there's petty theft and then it escalates. That can happen too. And that happened in another story with Jason Coleman. He lived in a homeless encampment, also in North Oakland. And he was, he was at home just hanging out, chilling. And then someone came up and took his bike, his 10-speed bike. And
his home was under an overpass.
Yeah.
Right?
And they went driving away, and he chased after all, you know, his friends came and chased after them, and then the guy shot him. And it was the same thing. It was just like one thing is stolen, and then, you know, people, it just escalates from there.
So in the case of Jason Coleman, who told his story?
His mom and his friends and his community from the homeless encampment.
Mm. Yeah, we went to the homeless encampment with a recorder. And folks really wanted to tell us a lot about Jason, but they really wanted to tell us about how they look out for each other and about how, like, Jason bought food for everybody.
A handful of RVs are parked under an overpass. Old couch cushions, clothes, and empty bottles are scattered over the sidewalk where people gather. This was Jason's home.
Yeah, oh yeah, I mean, we're a community, shoot.
This is Jason's friend, Linda. She lives in the encampment in an RV with her dog.
One time he came from Pack and Save, and they had made a mistake on his EBT card and gave him $100 more food stamps. He only was supposed to get like $40 or some food stamps. So he bought a bunch of hot dogs and hamburgers and coal and, you know, And it just so happens that what was that holiday? Labor Day weekend, because, yeah. And we were all real hungry, but none of the churches or the food people were coming because they were with their families, you know. He came riding on that little bike with a damn cart on the back.
Did you notice any patterns in your reporting or storylines that were common?
Definitely. There was definitely the storyline of the mom who loved Oakland, but also didn't feel that it was safe for her her black boy to grow up here. And, you know, in this is the story that that was Darnell Foster's story, and also the story with Sultan Bey, who was another victim. And the moms both had younger sons, and they were contemplating leaving because they just didn't feel like. That their sons were safe. They just felt like it was risky just to exist as a black child in Oakland.
A lot of people I know have moved their kids away, Arizona, Texas, and that's really, really sad. You know, like that African American boys are such at high risk living in Oakland. They don't have to be doing anything, no nothing on the line, nothing. Just get shot for no reason. And I have another black male child to raise.
It started to affect them, the things that were happening around them, especially when they started to lose friends, you know, friends that were shot at parties and killed.
Those were the voices of Chef Mimi, who lost her son Sultan Bey, and Adrienne and Amani Foster, the mother and sister of Darnell Foster, who was killed last year in Oakland. So, Anna, what other common threads did you notice?
There's another thing we found, another common theme, which was that people really wanted to tell us early on that their son was a good kid. Like, we heard he was a good boy, he was a good kid, and we learned eventually what they were telling us was kind of please grieve with me, don't write them off, you know? They're not the deserving dead that you think they are.
Yeah. Deserving dead.
Yep.
Yeah. What does that mean?
Well, there's a lot of people who kind of carry this assumption that, this person was up to no good, and they don't say to you they deserve to die, but what they're basically saying is this person deserved to die. They weren't doing anything good anyway, and so the moms are really trying to make sure that you knew that they were good. They weren't doing that. Like, please see my son in this light.
You're talking a lot about the moms.
Mm-hmm.
Was it mostly the moms?
Mostly moms.
Yeah.
Lots of moms.
Hmm. And so what effect do you think this documentary will have on them when they hear it?
I mean, hopefully it will help them with that concern of theirs, that people will – they're concerned people are going to write off their son, like we said, as deserving dead or as someone who had it coming or somebody who wasn't as valuable as white people's kids or wealthy people's kids, you know, or middle-class people's kids. And hopefully we can put these lives in a context that humanizes people and makes people understand that people who are killed are not what you think they are.
This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. I'm talking with Snap Judgment producers Anna Sussman and Adiza Egan about their new radio documentary, Counted, an Oakland Story. They explored every homicide that happened in Oakland last year, interviewing victim families, friends, and community. Let's continue our conversation. We'll start by hearing a clip. This is Principal Ruby Detai of Frick Impact Academy. Her student, 13-year-old Anibal Ramirez, was killed.
The day after Anibal was murdered, Principal Ruby called an assembly.
I did cry in front of my students just when I was explaining to them that I love them and we're a family and we're going to get through this together. When you work in East Oakland, there is a lot of trauma that is happening on a daily basis, and our kids are coming to school with all of that. He has a wonderful family, and they came here with the intentions of doing better. And I can't imagine, you know, because you just want to keep kids safe. He's just a kid. And if you don't remember that, then it's easy to say, oh, you know, I've heard he shouldn't have been outside, or he should have, and it doesn't make it right. He's just a kid.
Was your goal to hear their story or the story of their loved one or what?
That's a good question. It was a mixture of both. It was definitely their story because they're the person who's impacted. So, you know, with the story of Darnell Foster, his mom wanted to leave Oakland. And so it's like, what happens when you feel like someone is taken away from you and then you want to leave and then you're struggling to leave? She was on Section 8, and so she was trying to move out to Antioch. And, you know, she was interested in moving to Pittsburgh, which, you know, are the local suburbs where a lot of people from Oakland are moving to. And she was having trouble finding a place out there. And so it really became it was the story of gentrification. And so, you know, we talk about the ripple effect, and that was something that I think is really hard for, like, a daily news show to do, or, you know, to do one report on the homicides. You can't capture that in the same way that you can when you capture a year.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you know, it was important to tell their stories, too.
Lead to anything else that you didn't expect?
Everything. It led to all of this great reporting that we didn't know was coming, which was our hope and definitely happened. One of the most amazing things we learned from where I sit, we learned it really early on, is that folks we were interviewing in the community said that they believe that upwards of 80% of homicide in Oakland is retaliation killing, which is another reason why everyone knows each other.
Yeah.
And a ton of the people we profiled were killed by good friends of theirs.
Yeah, people that they knew.
A huge number of them.
People they went to school with, people who had been in their homes.
Slept on their couches, fed by their moms. A huge number of them.
When you share these stories, it brings up so much. Did you find yourself in a position of, now you have to deal with, I made these people come and talk to me, and now they're feeling a certain way, or I took them back to this horrible thing in their life, or at some point were you like, oh, why am I doing this? Why am I reminding them of this catastrophe? Is it worth it?
Yeah, definitely. I had that a lot, especially in the beginning. When you first reach out to someone and you're trying to figure out what to ask them, how to kind of read their energy. And a lot of part, you're nervous too because you don't know what to say and you don't want to offend someone when you're talking about someone who they lost. But I think because we were doing multiple interviews with people, we would just kind of like, chip off a little bit each time. And so the first time, if someone agreed to the interview, a lot of the times they had something that they wanted to say, and we just left it at that and then would come and revisit it. And I think a lot of the interviews would run long because you it was like you opened up that wound and then you allowed some time for healing and for them to close it back up.
With the issue of re-traumatizing people with an interview, I think re-traumatizing happens, like Adiza was saying, if you're being insensitive. But people, you're not reminding someone that their son was killed. That the fact that their son was killed lived with them every moment that they're alive, and they want to talk. I understand this. People are grateful for the that someone's asking them about it, and for the opportunity to tell you everything about my son I want to tell you, and everything about his murder that haunts me, and I want to tell you all these things. And we absolutely told everyone, like we do with a lot of Snap Stories, if after this interview there's something you don't want on the radio, tell us. That's your right.
There's no gotcha.
There's no gotcha. Yeah, this is your story. You're doing us a favor.
Right.
Yeah.
What did you learn about Oakland?
I learned a lot. One of the biggest takeaways was just how connected the city is. It's like one degree of separation. Everyone has so much love for the city.
Even with people on our staff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Even people on our staff, everyone has so much love for the city. Even the people who wanted to leave, they really did. They felt torn. I learned so much about like geography and the streets and all these different places. I went to all these different places in Oakland.
It might be a cliche about Oakland and other cities that it's got all this heart, but we met so many people who, after they come home from their day jobs, they feed their children, and then they go back out onto the street to do work that they think is going to save lives. Like, we met this amazing woman, Sharina Thomas, who runs a group that she started called the People's Community Medics. They did an independent investigation into the Oscar Grant shooting and found out that, police put a perimeter of protection around a homicide zone, and they don't let paramedics in. And in the meantime, somebody can be bleeding to death. So what she does is she goes to schools, kindergartens, preschools, elementary schools, middle schools, high schools, churches, block by block, giving out kits and teaching kids how to stop the bleeding on a bullet wound, how to wrap it, giving people cards saying, call the fire department, don't call the police. They'll come quick. And she does this. She's a single mom with four children, and she works all day, comes home and feeds her kids, and then goes out and does these trainings. She's like, I have a direct line to the fire department, and we tell everyone to call them. And she goes, they're so nice when the fire,
The Bay Area has this history of activism, and you hear about the Black Panthers and how everybody would work like and stay up all night to like make the newspaper and prepare the grocery bags and to feed the kids. And it's that same, you could see that same energy in the activists out here. Like, they are willing to do whatever it takes to disrupt the cycle of retaliation and to talk to people and let people know that they love them and that they're loved. And it was real. There was like a lot of selfless energy out, and it was really nice to see.
What are you hoping may come out of this work?
I mean, I'm hoping that people hear these voices and feel like they knew these people and empathize with the people in these stories and just kind of like walk with them and, you know, just really take time to listen and don't turn it off because it's about violence or homicide, and just take time to really to learn about these people's lives, because I think so often, you know, they just become numbers. And what we wanted to do, the whole thing behind this was just to like put some names to faces and to just let people know that like these people were all individual people who were loved and had lives. And that's the most important thing.
Those were Snap Judgment producers Anna Sussman and Adiza Egan talking about their new radio documentary, Counted, an Oakland Story. They explored every homicide that happened in Oakland last year. The documentary airs this Saturday at 11 a.m. right here on KALW. Throughout today's show, you've been hearing the music of Oakland's own Fantastic Negrito, whose music is featured in the Snap Judgment documentary we've been talking about. You can catch him at a live recording of the Life of the Law podcast. That's this Friday at the Polish Club in San Francisco. Show starts at 7 o'clock. The Cross Currents team includes Asala Sanipour, Janae Darden, Raquel Maria Dillon, Lisa Morehouse, Zaina Nasser, Truk Nguyen, Andrew Stelzer, Marissa Ortega Welch, and Josh Wilson. Our engineers are James Rollins, Gabe Graben, and Jackie Sajiko. The line producer is Hannah Kingsley Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Today's local music is by Amity Rose. She plays at the Hotel Utah in San Francisco tomorrow night. Show starts at 8 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Pava.
Whatever low.
Tune into Cross Currents tomorrow at 5. We're headed over to Scrap, a creative reuse center in San Francisco serving San Francisco teachers.
I know that when you do your taxes, you can deduct up to $500, and I'm usually over that.
That's tomorrow at 5 on Cross Currents from KALW News.